Boker Tov world. Wonderful to be with you again. Today's daf in Masechet Yitin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Nun Hei, and we're holding at the Halakha Mishnah, four lines down from the top of the daf. So now, remember that our entire perek, actually past two perekim, have been focused on the idea of Tikkun Olam. This perek, specifically Tikkun Olam, in issues that have to do fundamentally with financial issues. And now we're throwing in a Mishnah that really belongs in Masechet Idyot, which is actually where it occurs, which includes a number of other issues that are not directly related to the Tikkun Olam. But the reason that we bring it here is because these were a number of different things that Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada was made on in Yavne. And the last things that he said are other examples of takonos b'shum tikkun olam. So because of that, we quote the entire Mishnah here, even though the first thing are not nogea tikkun olam. But what's interesting is that they are nogea gittin. So it's actually a toss-up. We could bring the Mishnah because we get both sort of a return to inyanim of gittin, and we can also deal with two more new chidushim about Tikkun Olam. So, Heyid Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada, this was the eighth member of the time we use that word, we mean that we're going to be made. These were things that were said on the day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was made, and they opened up all of the, they made him Nasi, and they opened up all of the yeshiva that everybody could come in and learn. So that day, they said over all of these idiot, and one of the things that he said was a chareshet. There's a fascinating idea. Because just because a girl who is a ketana is also a chareshet, it shouldn't make any nafkamina at all, right? Because essentially, if a father is mekabel kedushin for a child who is a ketana, then it doesn't matter whether she doesn't have das as well because she's also a chareshet. That's irrelevant. So now she's fully married, even though she is a chareshet. And the din is that she can be divorced, and you can give her a get. But you'll say, but how can I give her a get? Now she was married to Yeraisa, now she's a grown-up, and how am I going to be able to give her a get since she doesn't have any das of her own? So therefore, it's clear from here that it doesn't matter whether she has das in terms of the gerushin, because an isha, remember, is mekabelat gita even ba'al korcha. So therefore, since the male can give a get ba'al korcha, it doesn't matter, even though she was married to Yeraisa, and that she has no das in terms of the gerushin. Her das does not function in the gerushin at all, except to the extent, as we'll see, that she has to be capable of being shomeret, says Gita. So she needs to know how to keep something, and not just throw things out, and because otherwise there's no venatan beyond that. Fine. The other thing that he said, an edus about, is this is a little strange, because all of a sudden he changes gears. And instead of talking about a chareshet, he changes it to be talking about just a ketana for some reason, which the Gemara is going to examine. The al-ketana, even though she is not a Kohenet, she's a Bas Yisrael, and he, now a Kohen, went ahead and married her, and this is not talking about where the father was Mekabel the Kedushin, it's talking about where we have only a Kedushin Drabbana, because she doesn't have a father, so her mother was Mekabel as Kedushin, her brothers were Mekabel Kedushin, she marries a Kohen Midrabbana, that nonetheless she can eat Truma. Wow. Even though she's really not married, Midiraisa, but she's allowed to eat Truma Dirabona, as we're going to see, which means that we did not asser her from some kind of gezeira that she might come somehow to eat Truma Dirabona, which would definitely be asser because she's not really married, Midiraisa. Furthermore, if she dies, even though the marriage is only a Dirabona marriage, Ba'ala Yorsha, that nonetheless, the husband will inherit her. So remember that one of the major Mekairas, that Hefker Bezdin Hefker, is gufa from the parsha that we just had. That it's possible for the Roshim and the Zakenim to define who gets which nachala. From there we also see that we can be koveya in Beis Din the rights to Yerusha. Now we get to the part that does have to do with the Tikkun HaOlam. The Al HaMarish, and Gavi will write down Takanat Marish, which is a very important concept. Takanat Marish means that if somebody takes, obviously it's a special case, but it has general application. If somebody builds a Marish is a very strong beam that is used to support an entire roof. It's very difficult, it's very valuable, difficult to get the size that you want. And somebody stole a Marish and built a beautiful home around it. Now he's starting to feel, I'd like to return this. I can't tear down the house to return it. So if he wants to return it, he wants to pay for it, is that good enough? Because normally we say, if you stole something and now it's no longer extant the way it was, you can pay for it. But if the thing that was stolen is still around, you have to give it back. And if the Nigzal wants it, so you have to give it to him. He doesn't want to accept cash. But there was a takana over here that the person who was victimized by the gezela has to accept cash. So if the person was already built this marish into a home, mipnei takanat hashavim. This is a new takana, and it's called Takanas Morish, otherwise known as Takanat HaShavim, which allows people to do teshuva, because otherwise the loss, the financial loss, is so great, it's very hard for a person to bring himself to a matzav where he's going to tear down the house that he just spent 10 years built around this Morish. And there was another takana that was made, which is also Tikkun HaOlam, and that was a Chatat HaGizula Shenodo Lono Dalo Rabim. So someone stole a carbon, he stole a behemah, and he makes it into a carbon chatas. And, so then what happens to that carbon? Because, I mean, the Kohanim that are bringing that carbon, they have no idea that it's not a kosher carbon because it does belong to him. And they end up eating from the carbon chatas, which is eating chulin ba'azora, bringing chulin ba'azora, it's a disaster. So the takana over here is that such a chatas should be mechaperet, you don't bring another one, because of a tikkun for the mizbeach, which will explain what the takana is for the mizbeach per se. Omar Rava. So first let's take a look at Rabbi Yochanan ben Gugida, because he said that someone who is married midiraisa, but who does not have das, and what was the case of Chareshet, that the father accepted kedushin for her, she still is able to get a get. So what does that show you? It shows you that it's not necessary to have the das of the woman to receive a get. Therefore, says Rava, you see what we learn out of here is from the Edus of Rabbi Yochanan ben Gugida. Imagine a situation like this. A guy says to Aiden, and his wife doesn't hear this, "U get zesh aninotema." Here, read this. See, this is a get. Okay, I'm going to give her this get. He goes over to the woman, turns to her, and he says, "Here, take this shtar chov, take this check," right? And he does not tell her that it's a get. Afal piken harezo migureshet, even though she didn't realize it was a get. Now, gentlemen, I must warn you that it's not considered to be v'natan b'yada in the event that she doesn't know it's a get. And that's one of the 10 basic things that the Rambam tells us is essential in the giving of a get. So when it says over here, "Kinsish tar chov arezu megureshet," it's only when she ends up knowing that it's a get. So as long as it's in her hands when she knows that it's a get, that's considered to be a kiyum of the nasan get. But since she didn't need das, so memela doesn't matter, even though she didn't take it midata. How do I see this, says Rava, from the Mishnah? Well, did Rabbi Yochanan say beferish here that we don't need das? I mean, he said you can give a get even to a chareshet, and the chareshet is married midiraisa because her father accepted kedushin for her while she was a ketana, and nonetheless it says you can give her a get. So then if that's the case, So we don't need her acceptance of the gift in order for it to be a gift. Well, I understand. I mean, of course that's true, Pshita. I mean, I need Rava to point that out. And the whole idea of the Mishnah is built around the fact that an isha is mitkareshet ba'al korcha. What's the chiddush? No, because you might have said that maybe saying those words, k'nisei shtar chov said, is betulei batlei. That basically, he's saying that I don't want this to be a get. So in other words, if he doesn't want it to act as a get, then it's not going to be a get. Remember we had a machlokas before, whether it's there's a bitul haget or a bitul of the current validity of the get. Tosfos said before that once a person is mevatel a get, he actually takes away the koyach of the get from the shtar itself. You would have to write another one. The other Rishonim learned that the get is not itself bottle, but it's koyach to use as a get that is bidaz ba'ala, that it should be a krisus, that is currently bottle until he decides to use it. But in any event, whatever the pshat is, whether we hold like that side or we hold like Tosis's side, that you might have thought that meanwhile, betule batle and there's no gerish, and that's Rava's chiddush, kamash malan, that im ita the batle, since he went over to the Aden, and he told the Aden, I want you to see that this is a get. If his intention was actually to be mevatelet, then he would have said so to the Aden, because over here he's obviously trying to set up the gittin in advance, and instead he says it's the opposite to them. And Haideka Amar Hachi, the reason that he didn't say that here and he said instead, here, have a check, is because Mishum Kisufa, he didn't have the guts to tell her this is a get, but he certainly did not change his mind. Okay, so that's that first piece. Now, we now change gears, and again, we have a kohen that's doing a Srika Shuvah. That's a terrible thing. We're not learning Zvachin, excuse me. Barnea, no need to illustrate the Psulei Korban, my gosh.
I was changing gears.
So now we change gears. You can't win. I never open my mouth. So we're changing gears to discuss a case of a ketana instead of a chareshet for some reason. And there was a further edus of Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgadon that in the case of a ketana who was married by her mother, which is a kedusha de rabbona, and she married a kohen, that she's allowed to eat truma. Now, how come we change gears? What about the case of the chareshet? How about a chareshet? A chareshet who accepts kedushin is actually the same as a ketana whose mother accepted kedushin. The rabbonin were metakin kedushin for a charesh and for a cheresh. So then, why couldn't we just stick to the same case and say that a charesh would also be allowed to eat truma? Right? Apparently, she's not, because the only way we could give this din is by changing it to talking about a different type of the rabbonin marriage, and that would be of a ketana by a mother. So how do you explain that? My taima. Well, the truth is we cannot allow the marriage of a chareshet to eat truma. Why? Gzera shema yachil cheresh b'chareshet. You see, if we allow a kohen, who's a pikeach, a normal kohen, who married a chareshet, which is a kedusha d'rabbanan, if he's allowed to give that wife truma, so then the same thing might happen to a cheresh kohen, who gives his wife also truma. Now, what in the world would be so bad about that? Well, that if he's a normal pikeach who's a kohen, he's going to know that he has to be careful to give her only truma de rabbanan, mash enkein, if it's a cheresh, he might give her actually truma de raisa, and the whole nisun over here is only nisun de rabbanan. So memela, we said, even if the husband in this particular case is a pikeach, we don't give truma at all to a chareshet. Says the Gemara, well, what would be so terrible? The lechel. So let's say that a cheresh would give a chareshet to eat truma. Even if she's eating truma d'oraisa, what's the big deal? It's a katan ochel levelot. I mean, this is not that we are feeding her this. This is the equivalent of a katan, meaning a person without das, in this case a chareshet, and she's eating nevela, not literally nevela, but she's eating iser. And according to Waman di Amar, a katan ochel nevelas is not our business that we have to stop that, Because there's no chiyuv on us to see to it that someone without das doesn't eat the velos and doesn't eat the truma when it's usur. So are we saying that that's definitely cutting off on the velos is definitely usur and therefore we're going to make a gzera? No. The truth is that what we really want to get to is that a cheresh may actually give a pikacha truma. That's our problem. See? We can't go directly. What we're talking about over here is a gezera of a pikeach who's married to a chareshet. And the real gezera is ultimately for the opposite. A cheresh kohen who's married a pikacha. So if we will allow a regular kohen to be machal truma, then we would allow even a cheresh truma to be machal truma. Once we allow a cheresh kohen to be machal truma, then that cheresh might be machal truma even where he was married min rabbana to a pikachat. And over there, that's not a real marriage min yoraisa. It's only a marriage min rabbana. And she does have das because she is a pikachat. And she might end up eating mamish iser of truma de yoraisa. Therefore, in order to avoid the pikachat being nikshelet in achilas truma, which is an iser of misa bidei shamayim, so we answered it over here that she shouldn't eat. Okay, but I mean, let even that case, couldn't we allow her to eat truma derabanan? Because remember, we said that a derabanan marriage is okay to be machil a derabanan truma. That's how we started this whole thing with the din of a chareshet that is married to a kohen. So what happened? The ketana was married to a kohen. So what happened to the chareshet? Why can't she eat truma derabanan? No, because we can't distinguish between Truma de Rabbanan and Truma de Araita, because in the event that she's married to a Cheresh, he cannot distinguish. And because of that, Zera Shema Ati Lo Chulei Truma de Araita. So once we are going to talk about a case where the Cheresh is married even to a Chapikachat, which is possible, Mid Rabbanan, we need to worry about the Gezera of Truma de Rabbanan or to Truma de Araita. Now let's move on to the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada that he was made on, which is actually one of the Tikkun Olam Takanas, and this is called Takanas Morish, otherwise known as Takanat HaShavim. So, Al HaMarish HaGazul, Shebena'ov, you built a big beam that's supporting the entire roof, that you're not mechuyev to tear down the house in order to return to Marish, and the Nigzal has to accept money in lieu of the actual marish. So this was actually the topic of a novel, you may recall, by J.D. Salinger, but could be that you're too young to remember, right? A roof beam, carpenters. Well, a marish agosel shibana'o. Turn it up on it. Let's say a guy steals a marish. He builds it into a beautiful home, a bira. Bira is like a mansion. Castle. So Beit Shammai Omrim, well, Mika'akea kola birakula. I have to take the entire thing apart and you give the marish back. Whereas Beit Hillel Omrim, the most you can get back is Elo Elad Me Marish Bilvad, Me Takanat HaShavim. Okay, this is again like Beit Hillel. Next case that we had, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada spoke about another Tikkun Olam, and this was a Tikkun Olam that was Takonat HaMizbeach. So somebody steals a chatas, and if it wasn't nodat rabin, if people generally didn't know that it was stolen, then it would be mechaper. Why is there a difference between people knowing that it was stolen, people not knowing that it was stolen? I mean, not to mention the fact that how can the rabbanon actually make a takana that it's mechaper? I mean, if it isn't mechaper, so then what would that mean? That you were yotze, you're chiyuv of the korban, and it means that you're allowed to eat from this bayah, this zevach. So we need to figure out what's going on in terms of this takana. So first of all, what's the nafka mina? If people knew about it, people didn't know it. So my taina. So the ikar hadin is yush gedi, says ula, is actually not kana. So the way that Ula understands this is Dvar Torah, Bein lo da, Bein lo no da, Eino mechaper. The truth is that without this takona, it makes no difference. The kapara is ridiculous because you're bringing a carbon that's not yours. That's one of the fundamental dinim of korbanos, is that it has to be adam, it has to be chatato. So why, therefore, do we say that it's not mechaper even though you stole it, and even though the person that you stole it from was mityaesh, and if he was mityaesh, would that not make it yours? The reason is because yush kedi lo kani. So remember that we have a concept of yush, which is similar to hefker. And now the question is, if somebody steals something and the person that he stole it from gives up on being able to get it back, is that itself the equivalent of a kinyan for the gazlan? And at that point, the chatos would become his. And therefore, if he brings it to the mizbeach, it should be perfectly good and should be mechaper miikra din. And yet Ula is saying, no, it would not be his. So the truth is that there's a big machlokas about whether yush per se is a kinyan, or whether all that yush does is removes the rights of the original bialim, and now we need something else that's involved. Let's say a shinui rishus, or let's say a change in what it looks like. He turns it into something else. So is it shinui maisa, shinui rishus, that goes together with the yush that would be kena, but not simply yush? Now the truth is, as Tosis points out, that Ula, Dafka holds all over Shas, that Yirsh Bichti is Kena for Gezela. And the only reason that in this case it says that Yirsh Kedi Lo Kani is because of the fact that it's not Kena in terms of Karbonas. Why? Because for Karbonas, you cannot utilize the actual thing that you stole because it would be called a Mitzvah Haba'avira. And therefore it's not kosher for a Korban. So when he says Yish Kedilo Kani, he means in terms of Akrova. And if you look at Rashi, you'll see that Rashi stresses Lo Kani Le'inyan Akrova, that we do not call this Lo Karina Be Korbano. Tosis learns that that's because of Mitzvah Babi Ne'avera. Rashi seems to learn that there's another issue in it, and that the Korbano has to be a step removed from the Gizela. But in any event, it's talking specifically about this case, as we'll see. It's important for the sugya for us to understand this. So then why is it that the Chachomim said that as long as people don't know about it, that it would be mechaper? Because that would make Kohanim miserable. And they would be very reluctant to bring korbanos that might be stolen. Says the Gemara, but that's what the Mishnah says. Read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says it's mipnei takanat hamizbeach. You're saying it's for those poor, sad kohanim. That's not what the Mishnah tells us the takana is about. Amar lehem, okay, given to kohanim atzuvim. The reason that it's a tikkun mizbeach is because it's not that the mizbeach is going to spit out this carbon. It's that since kohanim are going to be worried about eating chulin bazorah and bringing chulin bazorah, so they're not going to bring korbanos that easily. They're going to want to see clear evidence of ownership. It's going to become a whole hassle to be able to bring a korban. And that is going to cause mizbeach batal. So because of that, the Mishnah says, ultimately our concern is not that the kohanim are unhappy. Ultimately our concern is to keep things moving smoothly in the Beis HaMikdash on the mizbeach. Rabbi Yehuda Omar, whereas Rabbi Yehuda argues with the Ula, he says, no, just the opposite. Actually, midiraisa dvar Torah ben lo da, it is mechaperet. Why? Because yirsh kedi is kena, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, the takanat hamizbeach is that if people know about it, that's the takanat hamizbeach. What's the takanat hamizbeach in that? Ma tam amru no da eina mechaperet. Because people will start talking about the mizbeach as not being makpid at eats gezeles, and they'll start being mavaza the mizbeach. So matam amru no da'ini mechaper shelo imru mizbeach ochel gezelot, and that works out directly with the words mipnei takanat mizbeach for the covet of the mizbeach. That people shouldn't be mizalzel in the mizbeach. Okay, so now let's take a look at the lashon of the Mishnah. The Mishnah talks about a chatat agezula. Why are we talking about a chatat? I mean, and if it's an Ola, that's Gezula. See, if it's a Chatat, now that makes sense according to Ula. Because Ula said that the Takona of the Chachamim over here is because the Kohanim are unhappy. Well, the Kohanim will be very unhappy if they're eating Tarfes and they're eating a Chulin Bazara, but an Ola, if it would have said an Ola, they don't eat an Ola. So then they wouldn't be so unhappy. So that would make sense that the Mishnah should stress the Chatas because that's where the Kohanim would be at Suvim. So according to Ula, it really adds up. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, why does it say Chatas? I mean, for heaven's sakes, it's even more apparent if it's a Korban Ayla where the Mizbeach eats the entire thing and over there it's eating a Gezula, so that would be even better, no? To say an Ayla. So Rabbi Yehuda, my Ari Chatas, Afilo Ayla Nami. No, says Rabbi Yehuda, just the opposite. If it had said Ayla, you would have thought only an Ayla, because the Mizbeach eats the Ayla entirely. Masha Enkein a Chatas. People are going to make fun of the Mizbeach, because, I mean, what does the Mizbeach get out of a Chatas, B'sach HaKol? I mean, just the Emurim and the Dam. So therefore, it's Kapitel Tzachidish. Even a Chatas, Kol Shekein an Ayla, but even a Chatas, the Chachomi made a takana that people should not say the Mizbeach is Eicheles Nemeleis. Let's see that inside. The truth is, Afilo Eilanami, but lo mi boy, karma, lo mi boy, Eila, not only an Eila, which is brought entirely on the Mizbeach to Kalili, and therefore reflects badly on the Mizbeach, Ela Afilo Chatas Nami, where the only thing that the Mizbeach gets are not very important parts, the Chelev and the Dam, alone. Who the Salik Lagami Mizbeach? Whereas the rest of it are eaten by the Kayani, Vida Kodi Maklili. Nonetheless, Afilo Achi, we make a gezeira shelo yomu mizbeach ochel gezeilot. Okay, now let's take a look at the lashon of the Mishnah precisely. Okay, it says in the Mishnah, al chatata gezula shelo noda l'rabim shehi mechaperet mipnei tikkun hamizbeach. Now, the tikkun is here that it should be mechaper, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, the takana was that it should not be mechaper if people know about it. So the language of the Mishnah is strongly indicative of Ula being right. As Ula was saying, look, mi ikra din yirsh is not kena. The chatas should not be kosher. And the rabbanan were metakein that it is kosher. Okay, fine. That's what it says. She mechaperet. So let's see that inside. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it ought to say the exact opposite. So let's look at it now. Al chatas gezula shelo noda l'rabim shemechaper v'nei tikkun hamizbeach. Bishlama l'ula, that's exactly what it should say. Ela l'Rabbi Yehuda, it should say the opposite. Yibcha miboyle, that they were metakein, that it's not mechaperet, in order to avoid reflecting on the mizbeach poorly. Yes, says Rabbi Yehuda, that's what it is saying. Achinamika Omar, the Mishnah is insisting that only if it's lo noda mechaperet. Why insist only if it's lo noda? And that if it's noda, it's not mechaperet. Why not? Mipnei tikkun hamizbeach. So it's essentially saying that. That's the whole point. Okay, so in this case, what we're saying is that in order for people not to say the mizbeach is eichel neveles, so what are we going to say? That the carbon was no good, and therefore we're going to bring another carbon? We're going to bring, understand, how can the Chachomim tell you to bring a korban that you're not chayiv? If they're going to make a takana alibi to Rabbi Yehuda, so Tosis points out, then they're being oikir adover min atar with a kum vaseh, because they're telling you to bring a korban that is not necessary. Now you should bring chulin lazor. How can they do this? So the truth is, and what we're talking about over here, is before the Zerika. Obviously, once this is found out after the Zerika, over there it was Mechapera already. They can't be Mechaivi to bring another. But the point is, when they say Eina Mechaperet, it means it's not brought. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi already incorporates the Tosfos with the words Eina on the second line, Eina Mechaperet Klomar Eina Kreva. It isn't brought, meaning we're not Zerik the Dam. And therefore we don't get into a situation. They're not telling you to do an Isser, they're telling you not to do the mitzvah of the Zerikas Adam. Memela, you're going to have to bring another carbon. That's the point. So over here, the way that we originally learned is that the Mizbeach is batel, and so you'll ask, how did Bezdin have the right to be Eker Dover min HaTorah and to say you do not have to bring a carbon chatas according to Ula just because Nimtza Mizbeach batel? So originally our understanding of that was, as Rashi says, because that's a Sheva Al Tasa. They're telling you, you don't have to bring a Korban Chatas. And they're not being Eiker of Dover Min HaTorah. Now, we're going to see that there's another issue here, which is the question of whether Bezdin, with the Keach of Hefker Bezdin, Hefker, can actually put that Chatas in your Rishus and make it therefore yours to be Yotzi the Chiyav of Korban No. That it's your own carbon indeed. So that at the beginning, Rashi, before the Gemara is going to get to that, so yeah, Rashi says, okay, so Tesheva Altasa. Now we get into another question. And this is the question of the Chiyav of Dalet Vehe. So you'll recall from back in Mishpatim that the idea of the payment for an act of Gezeva is you always pay back whatever it's worth. If you went ahead and you were gonev, then you pay back kefal. How about if you were gonev and you shechted the animal that you were gonev to eat it? Or you sold the animal that you were gonev? Then we have the special halacha that if it was a shor, you pay five times the value of the shor. If it was a set, you pay four times the value of the set. Okay, so that's called dalet vei, tashlumei dalet vei. Now, the din over there is that only Re'ehu is Mechayev you in Dalet Vehe. But if it belongs to Hegdesh, then there's no din of Tashlumim of Dalet Vehe. So now let's take a look at a Braita that seems to go against Ula. Gonav v'higdish v'chakach tavachu machar. Somebody steals, and then he makes it Hegdesh, and then he shechts it or he sells it. He only pays tashlume kefel. He does not pay tashlume arba ava chamisha, and arba ava chamisha is not chal on hegdesh. It's only chal if a person steals me re'ehu. So we talk about the entire halacha. It's always learnt out from a klal protocol. Since it says re'ehu by hegdesh, then that means dalet hay is not chal on hegdesh. Now the problem is, it says over here that if you were Tavachu Machar, apparently it did not belong to Hegdesh. Okay, now, Taniyala, the Braita says that suppose someone had shechted it, but it was outside of the Beis HaMikdash, the din is that he would be Chayef Kores. Now, you're only Chayef Kores if the animal that you shechted outside of the Beis HaMikdash was kosher for the korban. If the animal wasn't kosher, then there's no chiyav of kares, because it says el petach ol moed lo hevio, which means that had you brought it to the petach ol moed, it would have been okay. Well, it's saying over here, if you would have brought it to the mizbech, it would have been okay. V'haraya, it says your honor's kares. V'i amit yish kedilo koni. Now, if, which Ula claims, is that yish is not kaina, how in the world could you possibly be Chayef Kores, since this is not a kosher carbon anyway? So something is wrong. Now, what about the other question? I mean, couldn't we have asked directly from the din of Dalet Vehe? If Ula holds that Yosh Kedi is Lokone, how does he explain the fact that you're not going to pay Dalet Vehe because you were Magdish it? The Yosh is in Cana. So the Hegdesh shouldn't be Chal, because you are unable to be Magdish something that doesn't belong to you. So now, again, this is clearly, and Tosis brings this is clearly an indication that what it is that Ula was talking about in terms of Yish being Kena was only vis-a-vis the kashrus of a korban. It was not legabe monetary issues to see whether it would be Chal, the Hegdesh would be Chal or not. So therefore, we need to ask specifically from the korban aspect. The korban aspect is the chiyav kares for shchita b'chutz. If it's not a kosher korban, then there's no shchita b'chutz. So how does Ula explain this? Omer Rav Shizvi, Ula will hold that when we say your chayef kares, it means your chayef kares b'divrayan, b'drabanan your chayef kares. So, of course, the whole yeshiva bursts out laughing. This guy's crazy. Kares b'divrayan. Oh, my God. Amaratas. Achiku ale. Kares b'divrayan. Iiku. Whoever heard of such a thing? There's such a thing as kares b'divrayan. Amalo Rava, gentlemen. When a great man says something, you don't laugh at it. You try to understand it. It's very easy to laugh at things that you don't understand. So, Gavra Rabba Omar Milsa, Lo Tachuku Allah. Your reaction cannot be to smile. Your reaction is to understand. What Reb Shizvi obviously meant was that this is a chorus that is obviously a chorus of the Araisa, because there's no such thing as a chorus of the Rabbanan. But it's a chorus that can apply to you because of a Rabbanan. Meaning, Ukmua Rabbanan Bereshuse. The Rabbanan made this stolen animal your own in order for you to be chayev on it. And that would be a knas that they gave you. You want to steal? So then basically we're going now to an entirely new understanding. It's not that Rabbanan simply said that Sheva Al Tase. Now the point is, the way we're understanding it, is the Rabbanan actually put it into the reshus of the ganav, in which case, certainly he can do a hekdesh on it, and certainly it would be a kosher carbon, and that's why he doesn't have to bring another one. And even if he shechs it b'chutz, the carbon is considered to be a valid carbon, such that shchut echutz would be mechayev carbon karas, even though he had initially stolen it. Omar Rava, I'll tell you what isn't clear to me. Havada kami boyle. I have one area that is still confusing. I want to know at what point, I mean, you're saying, and I see that this is obviously what Ula is saying, and it works out very well in all of these brises and so on, so that the Rabbanan put a korban into the guy's reshus, an animal into a guy's reshus if he stole it, in order that he could be makdish it, and in order that it would become a good korban. Now, I just want to understand, how does that work? Does it work that the Rabbanan said, well, if a person is coming to be Makdashid, so at that moment, a minute before he's Makdashid, we make it his so that the Hegdash should be Chal? Or is this a general approach? The Chachamim say, look, if a person steals an animal, it's in his Rishus, vis-a-vis Dinim of Kachin, from that point on. And therefore, we'll have to make it a general Halacha. It belongs to him. So if it turns out that it's Makdashid, it belongs to him. So, I mean, that would be a big nafkamina, because is it from the moment that he stole it, or is it only from the moment that he comes along now to actually make it hegdash? What would be the din? And the my nafkamina is a big nafkamina, because, look, the guy might have kept it for months before he actually made it hegdash. So if this change in status occurs immediately before making it hekdesh, then that would mean that any profits from it in the interim. So let's say he had a lot of wool that he sheared. Maybe he had children during that time. Who is the owner? So let's say somebody steals a cow that is pregnant. So he is mechuyev to pay for a value of a pregnant cow. But right now, there's a heck of a lot more than a pregnant cow. There's a pregnant cow and maybe a couple of calves along with the pregnant cow. So does he have to pay back the calves and they're not his, or are they actually his? If we're going to say that it goes back to the time that he stole it, then that should mean that it's his own. If it starts only a minute before the hegdesh, he's going to have to pay back the owner everything. I want to know what the din is. Honorama Rava, then Rava said, after careful consideration, it seems pretty clear to me. Mistavra Mishatek Visha, it doesn't make sense that the Rabbanan would put it retroactively in the Rishus of the Goslin at the time that he stole it. Because, I mean, so then we're going to say, Shaloye Chote Niskar, you know, crime doesn't pay. No, it does pay, absolutely. If you steal and then you go ahead and you magdish it, you know, you get to keep the vodais too. Ha ha. No, so that doesn't make sense. Because what are we going to do? We're going to destroy the whole premise of Dragnet. Absolutely not. So we're going to make it clear that crime does not pay. And we're only going to give it to you from the time that it's necessary at Edesh Loyechote Niskar. Now this brings us to a very special moment in which, look at your screen and tell me where Doc is, okay? Were you careful to note how gradually Doc got there? No. So you see, it never fails. And I'm sure you're still convinced that I'm playing around with Zoom. But I'm not. All right. I want Rav Danny to explain this. Go ahead, Akiva. You talk to Rav Danny about this. All right, Doc. You got that hypodermic right on top of your little hat there. So be careful. Do you need more sleep? More coffee. All right. We are now, gentlemen, beginning the incredible confluence of the Daf Yomi to the 3 weeks, and to the Achonas for Tisha B'Av. So now the entire sugya, that is Nogea Tisha B'Av, we'd be allowed to learn these sugyas even on Tisha B'Av. That's how much they're Nogea Tisha B'Av. These are the sugyas that Beferish brought La'alocha that you can learn on Tisha B'Av. So we start with a halacha that is also a tikkun olam. It's a very, very sad tikkun olam. And this is the idea of sikrikon, which Gavi will write down to explain the concept of sikrikon and the takana of sikrikon. We refer to the takana of sikrikon with just the word sikrikon. So the concept of sikrikon is basically the murderous Nazis who will just go around randomly killing Jews without having to suffer any kind of legal consequences. And we'll see what level of legal consequences are nogea the dinim of sikrikon. And so sikrikon, sometimes sikrikon means it's just a shortening of Aramaic, or even it's even Hebrewish, which is take my land, sakaka, take my land, meaning that a guy tries to buy his life by giving away his property to a Nazi. So in the period where the goyim were running around and would be able to kill without complete impunity, they would be able to kill Jews. So then it was very easy for them to take the land from any Jew that they wanted. You know, your land or your life, and I'll take it anyway. So therefore, we made a takana in those times about what would be the din of the ownership of that land if somebody else wants to buy it from the Nazi who stole it. This would be very nogea, the issue of stolen paintings and things like that by the Nazi. This is unfortunately a very real kind of similar situation that we have mamish bizman hazeh, where people went ahead and bought works of art and stolen things that were sikrikon mamash from Nazis who took it from Jews. And the question is there a real ownership of these things, or do they have to be returned to the original owner? It's painful to note that 2,000 years later, we have exactly the same question. So it's not really 2,000 years, because the sikrikon was a reference to the second Beis HaMikdash and the Romans, but the concept is the same concept. So now, the lashon of the Mishnah is very confusing. Let me tell you up front what it's nogea, so that then when we learn the Mishnah, it won't look hopelessly ridiculous. The din of a sikrikon is predicated on two ideas. Remember that we have a halacha, Gavi, I'm sure you've written this, that was just in case, to luhu vizovin zvina zvina. If somebody is held up, and we won't mention which part of his anatomy he's being hung up by, but at some point he's going to say, okay, I sell. Now, the din is, if you do hang him up, then if he says, okay, I sell, then we understand that he actually is selling. There's a point at which he's ready to give in. And he was nechalei to sell. So the question is, if we don't think that he's really ready to sell, and that before endangering himself, he pretends that he's ready to sell, then we wouldn't say zvina zvina, right? Now, in the case of the sikrikon, the Jew goes over to the guy that he suspects is going to murder him. And he says to him, look, why don't you just take my property? And this way, he buys his life. But it isn't really that he is being held up in such a way that he actually thinks that he wants to give it away. Now, that is a very delicate kind of balance. And it's dependent on what the legal circumstances were at the time in terms of any hope that he might have of bringing legal action against the person who stole his field. And we're going to talk about later in the Gemara that he just gave him the field. There was no contractual basis for taking the field and so on. So it turns out that there were different levels of terror that were applied to Klal Yisrael, and that, as Tosis points out, there was a very special type of hatred that the Romans had to Yehuda, Dafka to Shevet Yehuda. And that was because of the Pasuk Yadecha Ba'orev Oivecha, so the Yerushalmi brings that they had a Mesoret that it was Yehuda that had killed Esav. Fine. So what about the story of Hushim ben Dan? So their Mesorah was Hushim ben Dan just gave him a bash in the head, back of the head, but it was Yehuda that actually cut off his head. Okay. Yadecha Ba'orev Oivecha. As we've pointed out in the Medrash Kerem, Dan and Yehuda are always found to be doing the same thing, and that's the Dan Yadin HaMoke Echad Shiftei Yisroel, which is Yehuda. And this is another wonderful example of precisely that. So, in any event, there were special gezeros against Yehuda, and the murder of Jews was far more countenanced, not just countenanced, but actually rewarded during the war with Titus. And they would pay people to kill Jews, and they would penalize people who didn't kill Jews. So at that point, Gemara is going to say, that's not called Sikrikon. That is called the guy really wants to save himself, and therefore that would not be called Sikrikon. Sikrikon is only where we believe that the person advanced the giving of his karka without having a real das, and because of that, he hopes that ultimately he would be able to recoup it in court as the situation changes and the Romans start presenting themselves as being liberals, which takes almost no time. They go from being murderers to being supposed liberals, only interested, of course, in Tikkun HaOlam, and because of that, the din of Sikrikon changes. So therefore, when we say, Lo hayah Sikrikon b'Yehuda b'harugei milchama, there was no Sikrikon, which doesn't make sense on the surface. There was even worse Sikrikon. Yes, but that's not called Sikrikon. So during the actual war at the Churban of the Bayis, there were no dinim of Sikrikon. From that point forwards, Meharugeo Milchama Ve'elech, there is a din of Sikrikon. What is that din of Sikrikon? Ketzad? The din of Sikrikon is that if a Jew goes ahead and takes, he buys the land that the Goy, the Sikrikon, had taken from the Jew, and then he goes to the owner, and he says to the owner, I want to be kine your karka. I understand that the Sikrikon didn't really own it, and I want to make a kinyan on the karka. And the guy allows him to make the kinyan. So the halacha is that the mekach is batel. He has to give the land back, because the guy only agreed to do the kinyan is because he was terrified that the Sikrikon would come and take it out on him. I sold this land and you refused to do a kinyan, and now he shoots him. So because of that, he went ahead and did the kinyan. So if that's the case, then obviously it wasn't really kinyan nidaita. Another possibility that Rashi brings is that he's ready to go ahead with the Jew's purchase from the Sikrikon, not because he wants it to be a kosher purchase, but because he wants to be able to take the Jew to court. So the Sikrikon, he knows he's not going to be able to take the court, but the Jew, he'll take the court, and he'll tell them, listen, you know, it never belonged to the Sikrikon, and you should give it back to me. So therefore, over here, we do not take his kinyan as being a serious kinyan. The whole mekach is batel, and he's going to have to give it back. But suppose first he goes to the balabai. And he goes and is kena from the balabayat. He says, look, I want to get your land out from the Sikrikon. would you make a kinyan? And then he's chazav alakach misikri kon. Then the mekach is kayam, and he does not have to give it back, because since the owner agreed before the sikri kon sold it, it's not reasonable to say that he was scared of the sikri kon. And therefore, in such a case, the mekach is kayam. Now, interestingly enough, we have an equivalent halacha benogea our dinim of ksuvas isha. So suppose a husband had land that was miyuchat for a ksuvas isha. A guy goes and he buys land from the husband. And then he goes to his wife and he says, look, I'd like you to sign off on your right of having a lien on this property for your ketuvah. And she does. So he goes ahead and he says to her, how about if I give you maybe 5 cents on the dollar, okay? And now you sign off. You don't have any right to take this property for your ksuva. So then the din is that the mekach is batal, meaning the part that he bought from the wife, that's batal, because she could say, my husband is a secret con. In other words, I don't want to get into trouble with my husband. He's going to say, I'm trying to make a sale, and you tell the guy you refuse to sign off. So I agreed to sign off, but I didn't really want to. On the other hand, if you first go and you buy the lien from the Isha, and then you go to the husband, then Mikho Kayam, for the same reason. She can't say up front that I agreed only because my husband would sell, because her husband wasn't selling it. Okay, now, this is all based on the original Mishnah Rishayna, that if you buy property from a secret kohen, you have to buy it somehow from the original Bialim, and otherwise it's batal. But, based in Shalach Harayim Amru, afterwards the Beis Din made a takana, and that is, the halokeach misikri kon, notein lebaalim revia, you don't have to worry about anything else. So the Beis Din made a general survey that when people buy from a sikri kon, they usually end up getting a 25% discount over the land, the equivalent land that would be sold by a Jew. Therefore, they said, look, take that 25%, give it to the original Bialim, and that way we reach a compromise. The guy gets a little bit back, so to speak, from the guy, and you get to keep the field. Me'ematai, when do we say such a halacha? Bisman she'in bi'adam likach. That's only if the original owner was unable to have the cash to go to the secret corner and buy it back himself. Avayesh bi'adam likach. They have a right to buy back their own field before anybody else does. And therefore, in such a case, even if someone else had bought it, if the person could show that he has the money, that person would be mechuyev to actually sell it back to that person, to the original owner. And this is even if he comes into money later, is how we end up asking. So ain kodmin l'chol adam. Now what happened is that there was a further change, because at the time of Rebbe, he was moshiv another Beis Din, and they came to a vote, v'nimnu, she'im sha'ata b'fnei sikrikon, shnei masar chodesh, if it had already been in the rishos of the sikrikon for 12 months, then kol hakodem l'karka zacha. Then you can buy it and you don't have to give it back to the original owner, but you still have the original takona of paying 25%, because we're assuming that you got it at a discount. But we do not want property that is going to sink into the hands of the Nazis. Okay, so now if you read the Mishnah literally, it's saying something insane. There were no secret kin when the war was going on. I mean, if there was no secret kin when the war was going on, when were there secret kin? I mean, that's ridiculous. That was the most dangerous, horrific time. So you're telling me when things cooled down a bit, and afterwards, when there was a little bit of the law that was nogea there is secret kin. It should be Vafka, just the opposite. I mean, during the war, everybody was trying to save their lives, no? Omer of Yehuda, yes, it means, doesn't mean there weren't secret kin. The concept of secret kon is a shorthand for the word of the takanot of secret kon. So when it means lo loya sikrikon, it means lo danu badin sikrikon ka'amar. That the halachas in the Mishnah that say you should pay 25% or that you have to go to the Bialim first was the original. None of that applied. You know why it didn't apply? Because the Amar of Asi, there were three levels of the complete hefkeris of Jewish blood by the Romans. The first issued gezeira that they...
Phases.
Yeah, what did I say?
Levels.
All right, yeah. Three phases, thank you. Yeah, so the first gezeira that Titus had given is that anybody who doesn't prove that he killed a Jew when he had an opportunity should be killed. Shish. The second phase was, okay, anybody who wants to kill a Jew, he needs to have a Jew-killing license, which costs 25 cents. Okay, so, Lysa Arba Zuzin. Let him bring 25 cents to the courthouse to buy a license. And the last one was, no, we are an enlightened nation of law, and anybody who kills a Jew will be killed. So, kol dekato l'ktaluhu. So, therefore, during the first and second phase, these people could basically were going around murdering. So, therefore, kime dekatle, agav unse gomar umakne. This is a real tolo'u v'zov. The guy was terrified, and he knew there would be nothing he could do about it, so he completely, I've been glad to be out of here alive, you know, keep it. So over there, there's no din of sikrikon. But then, when supposedly there was a legal protection, so then, obviously, you weren't going to get legal protection by dialing, you know, 100 or 911 for the cops. That I guarantee you. All right, so the guy is there with a gun, you know, and the Nazis in the front yard. You're going to give him the land. But you know that ultimately, of course, Black Lives Matter, and therefore you're going to be able to eventually get the courts to move on this, because otherwise they'll have to admit that they have no rule of law. So therefore, in the Batraita, a landowner would say, you know what? Let him take the land today, because I can't protect myself. But ultimately, these guys are going to supposedly answer to the law. So lamachar tavana lebedina, I'll get myself a good lawyer, and when things calm down a bit, I'm going to get it back. So therefore, he was not really willing to let go of his bialis. And therefore, we have our takana of sikrikon. Tomorrow, we shall begin, Bezrat Hashem, our examination of Ashrei Adam Mefachet Tamid and the Inyanim of the Churban HaBayis.